We're in chapter 28. We're going to look at really the garments of the priesthood. So verse 1, now take Aaron so they had, up to this point, right, they had basically designed the tabernacle. They had built, you know, God had given them the vision really for the tabernacle, and now he is making ready his priesthood that would serve as the person that would go forth with the sacrifices and the atonement for the people. And it says in verse 1, now take Aaron your brother and his sons with him from among the children of Israel, that he may minister to me as a priest, Aaron and Aaron's son, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. And you shall make holy garments for Aaron, your brother, for glory and for beauty. So, interesting enough, the priesthood was, as we know, Aaron and his sons were chosen for that. It wasn't something that you applied for. You didn't apply to God and say, hey, I would like to be a priest. It was something that you were born into. That's just the way God designed it, right? It was nothing that we earned. It's very similar to us, right? We're called priests, you know, as we're children of His, we're priests of His. We're not just given that priesthood because we're something special, right? We're given the priesthood because we're born into it. We have to be born into it in order to gain that priesthood. Right, and that's why John 3:3 is so dear to our hearts. Right, that Jesus said, "You Nicodemus, you must be born again," and so you must be born spiritually into the priesthood. So, Peter, 1 Peter, chapter 2, verse 5 would say, "You also, as living stones, are being built up a spiritual house, a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ." God will build us up, and His intent is that we would be holy, that it would be a holy priesthood, right? Because there's a lot of different priesthood in the world, in a sense. And some of them are evil, right? So God specifies here that it's a holy priesthood. And the purpose, God defines the purpose in 1 Peter. The purpose is to offer up to the Lord, a spiritual sacrifice that is acceptable, right? Paul would say in chapter 12 of Romans, right, and we're going to get there soon because we're going to go from Acts into Romans. And, he would say in there that hey, you know, we're supposed to be living sacrifices. And we're supposed to be acceptable unto the Lord. What's acceptable to the Lord? A holy sacrifice. A holy sacrifice. You know, and the church has kind of watered down the holiness of the Lord, in a sense, because we don't talk about holiness very much, right? And we'll get into some of that tonight. We'll talk about that. But the priest here, it says that they would be clothed in these holy garments for glory and for beauty. You know, so it wasn't an old humdrum kind of priesthood. It wasn't, you know, that, it, you know, we're supposed to look different than the world, you know. God dresses us up different than the world. You know, our countenance is supposed to be glorious. You know, it's supposed to be a reflection of Christ who is glorious and beautiful. You know, I think of some of the priesthood, in some of the religions that we know so we know of, that some of the priests there are just, they don't have any real glory in them. You know, you don't see any glory, you don't see any beauty in it, you know. It's kind of very dreary. And you wonder, why would anybody want to be that? Right? But as God dresses us, as He puts on them garments onto us, as He clothes us with His glory, there's something different about His kids. Right? And there's something different about His kids. Verse 3 there. So, if you shall speak to all who are gifted artisans, who have whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom, that they may take Aaron's garments to consecrate him, and that he may minister to me as priest. And these are the garments which they shall make: a breastplate, an ephod, a robe, a skillfully woven tunic, a turban, and a sash. So they shall make holy garments for Aaron, your brother, and his sons, that he may minister to me as a priest. So those men that he would call, you know, sometimes we would think that they're maybe our jobs aren't, you know, aren't very exciting, or you know, some people think that because people are in ministry versus their job or their vocation, that there's some difference there in which we are supposed to act, you know. If we're in ministry, we're supposed to go all guns out for the Lord, and if we're in a workplace, we just get by. And that's really not what the Lord wants us to feel like and do, right? He's positioned us in a certain place in which we should want to be good at that. We should want to work heartily after the Lord, right? Or for the Lord. And He's got us there for as priests in the workplace. You know, have you ever thought of it that way? That He's got us there just so that we can minister to those there. And he calls men that he doesn't call men because of their skillfulness, right? Did he call Moses because he was an outstanding speaker? Did he call Jeremiah because he had everything to say that was correct? Did he call Isaiah? You know, all these prophets, man, they felt as if they didn't belong in a sense, and why God would call them, because they really didn't have it in their opinion, right? But the bottom line is that God fills the gap, doesn't He? He fills the gap. And we can have confidence in that. But He calls men here, yeah, that have been gifted artisans, He would say, but whom also is filled with the Spirit of wisdom, a Spirit that would come, the wisdom that would come from God alone. And so this would be a requirement. Hey, I want you good, I want gifted men, but the other portion is that he wants men that were filled with the Spirit of God. And so if we look at how God picked his deacons there in chapter, what was it, 6, right? Or 4, I can't remember. 4 or 6 there, where He picked Stephen and the boys to wait on tables. They were just waiting on tables. But what was the requirement? That they be filled with the Spirit of God, right? So I think that's important for us too, as we talk about ministry opportunities, right, with other people. Are they filled with the Spirit of God? Are they really, truly united with God's heart as we are? You know? And I think we got to be careful around those things. Yeah, so Colossians 3:23 says, and whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not to men. Don't get hung up on being men pleasers. Be God pleasers. The priests were, it would say, you know, they were making this, yes, to minister to the Lord, but the artisans were very much a part of that ministry, right? The artisans were making the garments so that the priests could be equipped as the Lord would have them, right? And so they played a part in the ministry, even though perhaps they didn't take the sacrifice to the altar for the atonement for Israel. They still played a part in that. You know, that's why we can't necessarily go to every country and preach the gospel. Right? But we can certainly send people. We can certainly support people in that effort, right? So we have a part in it. Remember what ministering means. We covered this a few times lately. It's to serve the state at one's own cost. Right? So it costs something. Verse 5, the ephod. They shall take gold, purple, or blue, purple, and scarlet thread, and fine linen. They shall make the ephod of gold, purple, blue, purple, and scarlet thread, and fine woven linen, artistically worked. It shall have two shoulder straps joined to its two edges, and so it shall be joined together. So here it's given us the flavor here of the ephod. And it shall have two shoulder straps. Oops, I just read that. And the intricately woven bands of the ephod, which is on it, shall be of the same workmanship, made of gold, blue, purple, and scarlet thread, and fine woven linen. I finally got that right. Then you shall take two onyx stones and engrave them the names of the sons of Israel, six of their names on one stone and six of the names on the other stones, in order of their birth, with the work of an engraver in the stone, like the engraving of a signet. You shall engrave the two stones with the names of the sons of Israel. You shall set them in settings of gold. And you shall put the two stones on the shoulders of the ephod as a memorial stone for the sons of Israel. So Aaron shall bear their name before the Lord on his two shoulders as a memorial. And you shall also make settings of gold, and you shall make two chains of pure gold like braided cords, and fasten the braided chains to the settings. It's amazing that God would think of the, you know, as we go through this, it's a very detailed thing. There's a lot of, in a sense, of if you can think about this, God had a lot of thought put into this, you know, about how this would be. And so when we look at the ministry of the priest, the first ministry of the priest is always to the Lord, right? It's always to the Lord. And so when we look toward ourselves, what's our first ministry? Our first ministry is to the Lord. So often do you hear people putting their families first? Well, that's kind of messed up. And it does, you know, at first you go, wait a minute, I thought I was supposed to put my families first. Well, yeah, it kind of comes along with it, right? As we put the Lord first, yeah, then our families come directly after, right? We see that, right? But so there's that first ministry of the priest was to the Lord. But the second ministry for the priest was to the people, right? And hence, we see this ephod, which is a representation or at least a symbol for the 12 tribes of Israel. And so their service would be to the children of Israel. The priests would carry these stones here. They would be neatly setted in gold, right, on the shoulders of the priest. If we remember, Jesus said that His burden is light, right? And if we think of Him as our high priest, He carries our burdens upon His shoulders, right? And so the priest was to do just that. It was really a foretelling of what God was going to do in bringing forth the high priest that would come and would die for us, that would give us that final sacrifice, right? And what does God do today for us? He allows us to take our burdens and lay them upon Him, right? Because remember, His burdens are light. Why wouldn't we want to do that? Unfortunately, we don't always take full advantage of the Lord in that way. He so much wants to carry our burdens, but we just don't allow Him. You know, we just don't want to give it up. We hate the misery of the burdens, right? But man, we just don't want to seem like we didn't. Sometimes we just don't want to allow Him to carry them, you know? Yeah, sometimes we give and take, right? And that's not the way to do it. That's not the way to find peace, right? So to carry the burdens on the shoulder was the priest's job, really, to carry the burdens of Israel there on the shoulders. It was a hard job, and it continues to be a hard job, right? As priests, we should be carrying them burdens. You know, as I'm the pastor here, I carry some burdens, right? There's some things that I think about that probably nobody else thinks about because that's the way it is, right? But in the same token, I don't have to be the sole carrier of them. I don't think that I have to lift up the whole building and I don't have to carry it around with me all the time because Jesus will take my burdens as well, right? So I don't have to think that I have to be overburdened. And often people quit ministry because why? Because they're just overburdened. They've allowed, they haven't taken full benefit of the Lord's goodness and given it to Him. And so we got to be careful that we don't do the same thing. The priest would also bring the atonement for the sin of the people, just as our high priest brings atonement for our sin. Jesus carried our sin right to the cross. Remember, as a matter of fact, He carried the cross to the place in which He was crucified, right? At least a portion of the cross there. He would carry that cross for what reason? For our sins. He carried that cross. Then we have the breastplate here in verse 15, you shall make a breastplate of judgment, artistically woven according to the workmanship of the ephod. You shall make it of gold, blue, purple, and scarlet thread, and fine woven linen, and you shall make it. It shall be double into a square. A span shall be its length, and a span shall be its width. So a span is just this, right? The span of your hand from your tip of your thumb to the tip of your pinky. And you shall put settings of stone in it, four rows of stone. The first row shall be a sardis, a topaz, and an emerald. This shall be the first row. The second row shall be a turquoise, a sapphire, and a diamond. The third row, a jacinth, and a agate, and an amethyst. Okay, you guys said it good. And the fourth roll, a beryl, an onyx, and a jasper. And you shall set the gold setting. And the stone shall have the names of the sons of Israel, 12 according to their names, like the engraving of a signet. Each one with its own names. They shall be according to the 12 tribes. You shall make chains for the breastplate at the ends, like braided cords of pure gold, and you shall make two rings of gold for the breastplate, and put the two rings on the two ends of the breastplate. And you shall put the two braided chains of gold in the two rings which are on the ends of the breastplate. And the other two ends of the two braided chains you shall fasten to the two settings and put them on the shoulder straps of the ephod in the front. They're connected now to the ephod. And you shall make two rings of gold and put them on the two ends of the breastplate, on the edge of it, which is on the inner side of the ephod. And two other rings of gold you shall make and put them on the two shoulder straps underneath the ephod toward its front, right at the seam above the intricate woven bands of the ephod. They shall bind the breastplate by means of its rings to the rings of the ephod, using a blue cord, so that it is above the intricate woven band of the ephod, and so that the breastplate does not come loose from the ephod. So Aaron shall bear the names of the sons of Israel on the breastplate of judgment over his heart when he goes into the holy place as a memorial before the Lord continually. And you shall put in the breastplate of judgment the Urim and the Tumim, and they shall be over Aaron's heart when he goes in before the Lord. So Aaron shall bear the judgment of the children of Israel over his heart before the Lord continuously. So here we have the connection here, the breastplate with the ephod, and the breastplate, as we read there, would contain the four rows of jewels. And we get the picture here as God would take and he would put inscribed and engraved there on those stones each tribe, each son of Israel, right? And we get a picture of the uniqueness, right? They didn't have one stone. They had 12 stones, and each one was unique. And each one was a jewel to God. And very similar to us is that God would have us to be unique as well, right? He didn't create us all the same, and he's put a name on each one of us, right? To be used for a certain purpose, and we know one of the purposes is to bring him glory, right? That is the ultimate purpose for us even being here tonight, right? Is to bring God glory. It's not to fill our minds with a bunch of knowledge, to get more educated, to learn how to say some of these jewel names, right? It's not that. But it's really about giving him glory, right? How great is thou art. Thou art, right? He is great. It refers there to the breastplate as the breastplate of judgment, or the discernment for the will of God. Right? to know God's heart. You know, as you could say that, you know, we're God's kids, right? We're His sons. We sit there as He is our high priest, and that breastplate as He has us positioned closely to His heart, that we would gain His wisdom, that we would want to know His heart, that we would feel His heart, you know, His heartbeat. We would know His will. And these names here, that it describes this breastplate of judgment of the Urim and the Tumim there, means light and perfection, respectively. There's some vagueness here. I'm not sure exactly what was all meant by this, but these two stones here, these pairs of stones, the high priest would ask God a question, right? And they would reach into the pouch and pull out one of these stones for the answer, and one would be yes and one would be no, and it would be really of the revealing of God's will for them, a revealing of God's plan for Israel. And it was the priest, right? Something similar here is that I pray, Lord, reveal Your will for this church, right? And so, you know, I ask God, you know, God, what should we do in this? Sometimes He says no, and sometimes He says yes, right? But it's a revealing here of the will of God. Then in 31, you shall make the robe of the ephod of all blue. There shall be an opening for his head in the middle of it. It shall have a woven binding all around its opening, like the opening of a coat of mail, so that it does not tear. And upon its hem you shall make pomegranates of blue, purple, and scarlet all around its hems, and bells of gold between them all around. A golden bell and a pomegranate, there we go. A golden bell and a pomegranate upon the hem of the robe all around. And it shall be upon Aaron when he ministers, and its sound will be heard when he goes into the holy place before the Lord, and when he comes out, that he may not die. So the robe was around his, or the bells there were around the hem of the garment, so that people would know that as he went into that holy place, and that he was still alive, you know, that God hadn't judged him because he went in there in an unholy manner. You know, thank God that he doesn't do that today. That we come to church and maybe we don't have things worked out with him, and perhaps we don't even come, you know, or we don't come in a holy manner to him, right? And we have things that we should have taken care of beforehand, but maybe we have something against a brother or against a sister, and we should have took care of it weeks ago. And but we come and God is gracious, you know, because that's not a holy, that's not a one to come in a holy manner, you know. But He's gracious. There's been speculation and thought that also tied to the priest's ankle was a rope, and if they said that, hey, if you don't hear the bells, you pull on the rope, pull them out of there, kind of thing, you know. But it was to give a sign that he was alive, that priest was alive. Verse 36, You shall also make a plate of pure gold and engrave on it, like the engraving of the signet, holiness to the Lord. And you shall put it on a blue cord, that it may be on the turban. It shall be on the front of the turban. So it shall be on Aaron's forehead, that Aaron may bear the iniquities of the holy things which the children of Israel hallow in all their holy gifts. And it shall always be on his forehead, that they may be accepted before the Lord. So as we look at this, Aaron, it says that Aaron would bear the iniquities, the iniquity of the holy things which the children of Israel hallow in all their holy gifts. You know, Aaron certainly, you know, as you look at this and you think about Aaron, right? When you think about Aaron, what do you think about that of him, of that person, you know? I always think of Aaron as the guy that would have the people melt down their jewelry and would create the calf there, you know? And sometimes I think, you know, we think in order to be of service to the Lord that we have to have already perfected ourselves. You know, we have to come to a point, we have this place in our mind which we have to come to before God is ready to use us. And Aaron is a perfect example, is that he wasn't to that point yet and God was starting to use him. You know, God knew that he would fail. Yet he allowed, even though he was tainted with iniquity, right? Even though he was tainted, God still allowed him to be in this kind of service. You see? And if there was no grace at this point in time, Aaron wouldn't have been there, you know? So see, God's essence, one of his essence is grace, right? And mercy. And if God didn't distribute that at this time, Aaron wouldn't have been able to even exist in this position in which God had put him in. He wouldn't have lasted. His sons wouldn't have lasted. Right? But God, too, in the same sense, one of the essence that we can count upon the Lord is that He is holy. Right? That there is a holiness with the Lord. And that when we bring our sacrifices to the Lord, what's our sacrifice today to the Lord? Us, right? When we bring our sacrifice to the Lord, it should be in such a manner that it's acceptable to the Lord, right? We should do our best to make ourselves acceptable to the Lord for service. That means be willing to draw close to Him. That means be willing, as we draw close to Him, to respond to what the Lord has shown us in our own lives. That means repenting of sin. That means hating sin. That means drawing close to holiness, you know, being holy as we draw close to the Lord. But you noticed here that it was on their foreheads that it would be place. It was something that should be on our foreheads too. Maybe not literally. I guess I wouldn't want to walk around with any kind of letters on my forehead if I didn't have to. But I think from a spiritual standpoint, I think it should be on the forefront of our minds, right? That we should, holiness. I want to be holy, Lord, before You. That is my ambition. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 13 through 16 says, "Therefore gird up the loins of your mind, be sober and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lust as in your ignorance, Or you could say, as in your old life, right? Because we were ignorant. But as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. Right? And we find that Peter quotes there Leviticus chapter 11, verse 44, and 19, verse 2. So God is holy. It's certainly, like I said, it's certainly His essence. We'll never separate that from the Lord, right? He's always holy. We find a couple scriptures here where people acknowledged who God was, and one of them was Hannah, right? In 1 Samuel chapter 2, she says, "No one is holy like the Lord," and that is certainly true. That is certainly true. "For there is none besides you, nor is there any rock like our God." There's nobody holier than the Lord. We cannot obtain that. But our mission is holiness. Isaiah recognized that God's message was perfect. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 3 says, "And one cried to another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of His glory." Isaiah was saying, look around. Look around and see His perfectness in His creation. Now, He was perfect and He was sinless. And when we look at God, we see that throughout His whole character, it's pervasive through His whole character, is holiness. Right? We see that He loves perfectly. Right? He distributes grace perfectly. And He distributes mercy perfectly. You know, so as we look at God, He is holy. It's His character, you know, it's just who He is. And then in Leviticus 11 and 19, we see that God would tell Israel, "Look it, I am holy. I am holy. Be holy as I am holy," He would say. God's expectation was that they would be set apart, right? That the nation of Israel would be seen differently by others. Right? And I think of us when we go into the world. Yes, we're in the world, but the Lord says we're not of the world. Why is that? Because we're holy. On our own account? Absolutely not. But it must be a desire for us that we, as we draw closer to the Lord, that we want to be more like Him. That we want to be so much like Him that we're despised as He was despised. That we are rejected like He was rejected. Right? Are we willing to be separate? You know? Some people might even call you out because you're separate. They might call you out that you're strange. They might even take shots at you to say that you're not tolerant. Right? Because God has called us to be peculiar people. To a holy, royal priesthood. Right? And so, that's what it means to be holy. To be separate. You know, if you took nice clean water and you put dirt in it, you stirred it up and it looked kind of muddy, you probably wouldn't drink it, would you? But you run it through a purifier and it takes the dirt out. Now you drink it, right? See, that's the same thing can be said for us. With our sin, God can't use us. Our sin doesn't enable anything other than more sin. But God's holiness takes away that sin as we deal with it, right? As we do, as we apply it to, you know, His righteousness to our lives, He makes us holy. It's nothing that we do. We can't stand up on the stage and say that we're something special. But it's something that but it is a decision. It's part of that sanctification process of making the right decisions so that we can grow more holy in Him. You know, and it really tells us too is that we have a reliance on God. We rely on Him for strength. We rely on Him for food. We rely on Him for His Word, right? His daily bread, right? His true daily bread. We rely on Him for His guidance. We want to be guided in the right way. We want to, you know, if our sin is holding us in a certain position, we're not able to even hear the words of God. If we're so wrapped up in ourselves, we can't hear the words of God. We can't hear the holiness of God. The one thing we can't do is we can't make ourselves holy. Right? But we can develop our relationship with Christ more fully so that we can achieve holiness through Him, you know, as He continues to change us. Verse 39, "And you shall skillfully weave the tunic of the fine linen thread with, you shall make the turban of fine linen, and you shall make the sash of woven work. For Aaron's sons you shall make tunics, and you shall make sashes for them, and you shall make hats for them, for glory and beauty." There it again. This is what it's for. It's for glory and beauty. It's supposed to be beautiful. "So you shall put them on Aaron your brother and on his sons with him. You shall anoint them, consecrate them, and sanctify them, that they may minister to me as priests. And you shall make for them linen trousers to cover their nakedness. You shall reach from the waist of their thighs to their thighs. They shall be on Aaron and on his sons when they come into the tabernacle of meeting, or when they come near the altar to minister in the holy place, that they do not incur iniquity and die. It shall be a statute forever to him and his descendants after him." So described here is really the high priest's garment, right? It was the high priest's garment. It was the one that they would wear into the tabernacle and into the holy place. And the garment there would speak of really the glory and beauty of the Lord. It would speak of what the Lord would supply us with, as the Lord would clothe us, you know. And the trousers, you know, the trousers that they wore was to cover their nakedness, to cover their flesh. Because nowhere in the sacrifice of the Lord did the Lord want flesh to be a part of it. He doesn't want our flesh to be a part of it. It's a spiritual thing. He wants us to be sacrificially from a spiritual nature. He wants us to lay our lives down for Him. And He doesn't want any distraction. We can't achieve holiness through the flesh. We can only achieve holiness. It's a spiritual act. And we can only achieve it if we're willing to sacrifice. You know, sacrifice the lusts of the flesh to lay it down for the Lord.